the purpose of pursuing spiritual life is to overcome this tendency and to be tolerant in all conditions and to be able to transcend these natural feelings of envy. In the spiritual world, there is no such thing as envy. It's described in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita and other parts of the Vedic literature that although there is competition, the gopis are competing for Krishna's favor. One is performing a nice service, making Krishna a flower garland. Another gopi is making some foodstuffs. And they're thinking, she has made a very beautiful garland for Krishna. Let me make some wonderful prasadam, which will please Krishna even more. But this is not material envy, because both want to see the other glorified. It's not that one wishes to see the other diminished. So everything is increasing in the spiritual world. Love for Krishna is increasing. And each devotee in the spiritual world is encouraging the other to increase his or her love for Krishna, to grow higher and higher. So as opposed to the nature of material pleasure, spiritual pleasure is increasing in an ever-ending, never-ending upward spiral. Whereas we perform some service or have some good fortune in the material world, it's there for some time, and then it fades away and ends in oblivion. Or there is envy, and someone is trying to take away somebody else's pleasure. But in the spiritual world, everything is increasing. Pleasure is increasing, service is increasing, love is increasing. So Prahlad Maharaj exhibited endless compassion. There was no bounds to his compassion. He wanted everyone in the material world to be liberated. And we read of many other great saints. Today is in fact the disappearance day of Haridas Thakur, a great contemporary of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is glorified as the Namacharya, the Acharya of the Holy Name. And he also desired that all the living entities would be liberated. This was his fondest desire. And Vasudev Dutt, another contemporary of Lord Chaitanya, the 16th century, he also prayed to Lord Chaitanya that I want to accept all the sins of all the living entities all over the universe. I want to accept the reactions from all their sins upon myself. Please do that so they can be liberated. Please transfer all their sinful activity onto my head, so that they can then be liberated, and let me somehow suffer for all of them. And Lord Chaitanya was very kind upon him. So in our present environment, we hear how Lord Jesus Christ also suffered. He wanted to suffer for the sins of all of his contemporaries. That's the mood of a pure devotee. He wants to suffer if others can be alleviated from suffering. So this is very extreme. Maybe it's a little difficult to understand for us. But these paragons of Krishna consciousness, like Prahlad, Haridas Thakur, and even Jesus Christ, and so many other great saints and rishis, who wanted to see others be happy, to give them Krishna consciousness, were willing to go to great extremes to suffer on their own. When Haridas Thakur, since it's his disappearance day, will relate some incidents about his life, was captured. He was his captors were instructed to beat him to death in public in all the major marketplaces of Navadvip. So we understand the esoteric understanding of Haridas Thakur is that he is sometimes described as an incarnation of Lord Brahma, or at least a partial incarnation, and sometimes elsewhere as an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj, who we're reading about here, or a partial incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. So he was the embodiment of compassion. When his captors took him out to cane him in 19 different marketplaces, they beat him with sticks, but he did not go unconscious, he did not die. They took him to one marketplace after the other. The idea was the present government wanted to establish that what he was doing was punishable, and therefore establish a precedent Anyway, they didn't succeed after beating him severely, and then they finally confessed that they were very frightened. They said, if we go back to our master and say that we didn't dispense with you, that you are still alive, we will be killed. What can we do? So taking compassion upon them, he said, that's all right, I don't want you to be killed, I don't want you to suffer. You just throw my dead body in the Ganga, and I will never return, and I will drown, and they will never see me again. So in this way, he was able to save the lives of his captors. And of course, he later was washed ashore, and he survived. But he was willing to suffer, even though they were beating him, and the idea was to kill him. He was willing to suffer just to save them. So devotees are willing to undergo many, many risks and even suffer for the sake of their work. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, who was Srila Prabhupada's guru's father, also a very great Vaishnava, we observed his appearance day just a few days ago, was also very concerned. He wrote many songs where he described the compassionate nature of a devotee, Paradukha Dukhi, one who feels the suffering of others as his own suffering. So as Prabhupada comments here, there are many spiritualists who prefer to seek their own otherworldly salvation or perfection. And the characteristic of Vaishnava is he doesn't want to go back to Godhead alone. Dhruva Maharaj also exhibited the same characteristic. When he was liberated, he insisted that his mother, who put him on the path of liberation and Krishna consciousness, go with him back to Godhead. He refused to go alone. So devotees are very gracious. They personify gratitude. They're so grateful to the Supreme Lord who has so kindly given them Krishna consciousness or lifted them out of the nescience of materialism that they want to devote the rest of eternity to repay them. Yaya tamam prabhajante tam sitai vajamiha There is a very wonderful and transcendental loving reciprocal relationship between Krishna and his devotees. The devotee, once he realizes that Krishna's mercy is with him, he feels he can never repay the Supreme Lord. It's like Prahlad, he suffered so much and Lord Nrisimhadev came personally to liberate him. Yet he felt there was, in these prayers he's offering to the Lord, there's no limit to how much he feels he has to repay the Supreme Lord. So it is said that one can never repay one's debt to Krishna or the spiritual master. That's the feeling of a devotee. So because he's giving this instruction, he wants so many conditioned souls to be relieved of their misery, and he's sending his agents. And his agents feel they can never offer enough souls to go back to Godhead. So devotees feel they want to deliver as many souls as possible to go back to Godhead. As Prabhupada writes, the material nature is very cruel. Even one who becomes very successful in the material world, at some point everything is taken away. Or sometimes it's taken away immediately. So the nature is like that. Chanchala, Dukalaya, Shashvatam, it's moving up and down, full of duality. And one who is truly intelligent, Nateshu Ramate Buddha, he does not take pleasure in temporary happiness. He does not delight in these temporary things of the senses, the mind, the body, the intellect. This is what distinguishes intelligence from ignorance. There's a nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter that describes all the qualities of a devotee, among which are knowledge and being able to distinguish matter from spirit. And anything which is contrary to these are described there as being ignorance. So all of these qualities that are exhibited by devotees, these are called knowledge. All the qualities of knowledge are exhibited. Forbearance, tolerance, humility, simplicity, gravity, perfection, compassion, attachment to Krishna, detachment from the material world. These are the qualities that are seen, evident in the body of a devotee. He's always exhibiting these qualities. And the great fortune to have a pure devotee like Prabhupada who came into our midst was that he exemplified these qualities at every moment, not just when he was teaching or giving some instruction to a disciple, but at every moment these qualities are manifest. So when Lord Chaitanya came also, he's considered the invisible incarnation of Krishna, the incarnation who is not seen, because when he came 500 years ago, he did not play the role of an incarnation of Vishnu, but rather he completely exhibited the role of a devotee of Lord Vishnu. So he's considered the invisible avatar. He was completely absorbed in the role of a devotee. So in that way, even though Krishna came personally 5,000 years ago to speak the Bhagavad Gita and provide the perfection of instruction through the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Chaitanya was even more kind because he came and exhibited everything a devotee should do. He took us through this instruction by his example. He didn't simply order or teach, but he acted out the role of a devotee. He was always very, very dear and acting in a way that was equal to all of his contemporaries. He glorified all of his followers as if they were greater than he was. He was always chanting the name of Krishna. He was always leading big Sankirtan parties, chanting and dancing. And he just went everywhere. As he walked the whole length and breadth of India. And in this way, that distributed love of Godhead, just like a great flood, like a great tidal wave, and gave every breath for this purpose. And sometimes we would see Lord Chaitanya, he came before Lord Jagannath, he prostrated himself, he became unconscious. Sometimes he exhibited the symptoms of a devotee in ecstasy. He would sometimes tremble, laugh, cry. And when he was carrying on his great discourse with Prakasananda Saraswati in Benares, he was asked, "Why are you chanting like this instead of studying Vedanta?" He said that my spiritual master, he told me that you should just chant and dance. That should be your main business. He said, "I was not so intelligent that I could understand Vedanta, but I was told to chant and dance. And as I began to chant the holy name of God and dance in ecstasy, I felt transcendental ecstasy. And somehow this transcendental sound vibration took over my whole body and mind, and I began to chant and dance like a madman." So the assembly in Benares appreciated Lord Chaitanya's presentation and could understand by his behavior and his speech that he was actually a full manifestation of the Supreme Lord. So in this way he traveled all over India and brought love of God like a great tidal wave. And Bhakti Vinod, who was in, of course, the same succession, predicted that one day that devotees would come from all over the world to chant and dance Jai Satchinandana in the holy city of Mayapur, or what was then considered part of Navadvip. They would come from every country in the world and chant and dance in ecstasy, regardless of their nation of origin or their race or their social status or their sex or anything. They would come and chant and dance in ecstasy together. Bhaktivinoda predicted this over 100 years ago. And he also predicted there would be a great personality who would spread this Harinam, chanting the Maha Mantra, all over the world. And of course he was benedicted by a great son, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who ordered his disciple Srila Prabhupada to do just that, inasmuch as he said, "You will please take this Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world." So coming down from Krishna himself through Lord Chaitanya, Bhakti Vinod, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Prabhupada, this mood of Prahlad Maharaj is exemplified. To take great risk and undergo great pains and austerities to liberate the conditioned souls, to educate them, to give them the power to distinguish between knowledge and ignorance, between spiritual pleasure and material pleasure. The Bhagavad Gita describes that spiritual, in the 17th chapter, that spiritual intelligence is a little difficult in the beginning. But it is nectar in afterwards, in the end. And similarly, material life is sometimes very enjoyable in the beginning. You see, when we're young, everything is a very wonderful, new, fresh experience. Then in old age, practically speaking, all the very same things are painful. So the material world is fraught with difficulty. And although pleasurable in the beginning, every pleasure, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, has a beginning and an end. Ateshu Ramate Buddha. So to be able to distinguish, this is what marks a sadhu, to be able to convey that actually everything that we see around us, everything that bodes great happiness and pleasure, wonderful, beautiful nature, so many fine songs, and beautiful creations by man, by nature, are a source of great happiness. So much wonderful poetry and music. But a sadhu is able to distinguish matter from spirit. And all of these wonderful, beautiful things, Krishna says, they all spring from but a spark of my splendor. So a sadhu knows that everything that is wonderful, great, beautiful, that comes from the Supreme Lord. That is just a tiny, tiny fraction of what the Supreme Lord is. And because it's temporary, one becomes very careful not to become attached to that which is temporary. And he seeks his pleasure from within. Because Krishna is very kind, as soon as we take one step towards him, he takes 10 steps towards us. So, as Krishna says, a little bit of effort on this path brings great rewards. There's no diminution. So we're very fortunate to have had the association of such great souls as Prahlad Maharaj, and through Srila Prabhupada, we're having his association, having the association of Haridas Thakur and Lord Chaitanya. When Prabhupada came to the West, very few people had ever heard of Lord Chaitanya, or even Krishna for that matter. But because of Prabhupada's devotion, his exemplary practice and his devotion, just by the way he worshipped Lord Chaitanya and Krishna, immediately there was an understanding that here is a great personality who is worshipping Krishna or God as he should be worshipped. So devotees will always be characterized not by what they say only, but by how they act and what they do. So great man is measured, yad yad acharati shreshtas tad tade vetaro janahasi yatamanam kurite lokastara navartate, by his deeds. And when his deeds are exemplary, then all the world will pursue them. So the nature of Krishna consciousness is that it is ever expanding. Just like spirit, it is always growing, something we don't have experience of. It continues to grow and expand. So, since a devotee is very humble, his heart is very great. It is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami that a devotee's heart becomes very, very big. It actually begins to melt like butter because he's very humble and very compassionate. So it's a credit and a great privilege to be here to see that so many of you have labored so hard out of your own compassion and devotion to Krishna and compassion for others, and following the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada to open this nice center and give everybody access. Prabhupada's vision was so scientific. He opened so many centers all over the world, almost 300 now. And even now we have so many little sub-centers, namhat groups. But he didn't simply wander about, but he created an entire little Hare Krishna universe on this planet with the idea that so millions and millions of books, he set up a system to distribute these books by the millions, literally, and then provide centers where people who became interested could further pursue Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees and the deities of the Supreme Lord. So this is Prabhupada's great genius. He didn't simply give lectures, or didn't simply write a few books, or open a few centers. He did all those things so that the most systematic way possible to give everyone access to Krishna consciousness would be there. And this way, fully exhibited the characteristics of a Mahabhagavat, like Prahlad Maharaj. There's no limit to the pure devotee's mercy. When they think of the condition of suffering humanity, they they actually cry, feeling the same pain as their own. So these great visions and institutions that Prabhupada set up were done simply with that idea, to alleviate the suffering of the living entities. As Prahlad says, my only concern is for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. So as this great Mahabhagavat, Prahlad Maharaj could see. So even at the age of 5 years old, he was assembling all of his schoolmates who are from very substantially well-to-do families, getting them to chant Hare Krishna in ecstasy, and teaching them that actually this material life is very temporary, even at great risk to himself. And it was due to this that his father tried to punish him. He was just speaking the truth. A devotee always speaks very truthfully. Sometimes it may be a little unpleasant, but the fact is that the truth is the truth. Of course, with austerity of the tongue, he's speaking very pleasantly according to time, place, and circumstance. Even though it is maybe a hard and difficult truth, he's speaking in a very palatable way. This is called austerity of the tongue. One has to speak satya priya hitam chaya, that which is truthful but also in a pleasing way, and that which is very beneficial and not agitating, and always speaking from Vedic literature. So these are the characteristics and qualities of a sadhu. And even though we are all neophytes and followers, if we try to convey what we have learned without any motivation to gain anything for ourselves, but simply to transmit spiritual knowledge, then it will be effective. So it doesn't matter whether we're neophytes or somewhat practiced, or whether we're initiated or uninitiated, if the impetus to repeat what we've heard is there, then we will be successful. Just like Prabhupada used to say constantly, if I have any success, or if I'm due any credit, the only credit is that I have tried to repeat what my spiritual master said. Bhaktisiddhanta was a great, another Mahabhagavat. And in that repeating process, if I have repeated purely without any motivation, without any ulterior motive, then I feel my life has been a success. So this is the nature of evam parampara paptam evam rajashi yogidu parampara, to transmit without any motivation spiritual knowledge coming from Krishna himself. And therefore, we can see how nicely the center is grown up, not by some material calculation, but by the direct mercy of Krishna, in fact. These things don't happen by some material calculation, but they happen by the energy that is coming through the devotees from Krishna himself. Otherwise, how is it possible that so much Krishna consciousness could spread around the world in such a short time? That is Krishna himself. So I'll read the verse again. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. Wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them. And one last comment, and we can have some questions. Prahlad Maharaj is the personification of the devotional principle of Smaranam. That is, he was never for a moment not thinking of Krishna. Even when he was pushed off the edge of a cliff, when he was thrown into a pit of snakes, his meditation was never broken, not for one second. And due to this fearlessness, Krishna always protected him. He couldn't be killed. So the idea of Krishna consciousness is to come to that point of meditation, where even though we have to live in the material world and act in the material world, somehow we should train ourselves so that our meditation on Krishna, particularly through vibrating the Maha Mantra, is never broken. So we'll stop there. And you'd like to ask anything or say anything? Yes.
Maharaj, there's some historical records of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu meeting Guru Nanakji. Could you elaborate on that?
I'm not familiar. I've heard that there was a meeting, but I don't know. Maybe somebody else knows. Do you know anything more?
No. You're not heard of that.
I've heard such a thing took place, but I don't know any details.
Might be, but that has not been mentioned anywhere in the books of Sikhs or anywhere in our literature regarding Mahaprabhu Chaitanya.
That's true.
Maybe that somebody might have out of affection or out of Shraddha, he might have said that this happened, but actually that I don't think, because that time was a little bit earlier, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's. Guru Nanak has been at a later age.
Yes.
Because at the time of Guru Nanak, this Vrindavan and Mathura, Vrindavan sites were existing. And Swami Haridas, he was a later incarnation than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Hmm.
So Swami Haridas was living at that time in Vrindavan. Vrindavan was actually paced out by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because when he came over to Vrindavan site, he got into trance and he was telling that here Bhagavan had this Leela and Bhagavan had this Leela. All that sites were explored by him, not by any person. They are not so old. Mm-hmm. We can say that these were the sites, they were populated at that time. They were not populated. Mm-hmm. But they were explored in the stage of trance. When he went to a certain place and Lord Krishna has done his Leela there. So he went into trance at that place. He made out that this sort of Leela was done at this place. So those places were taken out as places of worship. At the time of Guru Nanak, these places were existing.
Hmm.
So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a bit earlier than Guru Nanak.
Hmm. Thank you. So any other points?
Swami
Maharaj,
yes. Why did Krishna send Srila Prabhupada
at his old age? Well, of course, probably first meeting, you were very young men, you should preach Krishna consciousness. You're young and educated, intelligent and educated, you should preach. So one might ask, why did Prabhupada wait from 1933 to 1965? And of course, Prabhupada was working very hard in that period. He began Back to Godhead magazine, he took sannyas, he began translating Srimad Bhagavatam, and he had actually made a commitment in his mind to fulfill this order of his Guru Maharaj, and he was actually planning ever since that time, constantly thinking, he explained, how to fulfill this mission. So he had actually begun and completed three volumes, three books, which was the first canto, and at one point he was able to present them in libraries, presented them to Lal Shastri and so on, and got some recognition. So once actually Prabhupada was asked, why is it that you waited 30 years more, 32 years to fulfill the mission of your guru? He said, well, he gave me a very great task. I had to prepare. It's not easy to bring Krishna consciousness all over the world. So it's very difficult. And sometimes we, in our modern way of doing things, are due to our Western ways, those of us Western, we tend to do things rather hastily, without proper foresight or proper thought. But one of the qualities of a devotee, he's very enthusiastic and at the same time he's very patient. These qualities are mentioned in the Nectar of Instruction. First there's enthusiasm, and then somehow there's patience. So these are a little contradictory on the surface, but actually when one prosecutes all the different characteristics, he's enthusiastic, he's patient, he's determined, he's able to fulfill the desires of the Supreme Lord. So even though Prabhupada was apparently in a less capable condition in that old age, he was planning everything very, very carefully. As we see from his biography, everything led up to the next thing, to the next thing. And if we examine it from a historical or sociological point of view, we can see that he came, 1966, right into the midst of the part of the world where there were the greatest number of young people who were most receptive to spiritual life. He came to San Francisco in 1966 during the what they called the period of the hippies or the Haight era, H-A-I-G-H-T, it was Haight Street, Haight Ashbury. And things began to happen very quickly. There were a lot of resources at Prabhupada's disposal. So he came at a time when there was great receptivity towards Krishna consciousness. So if we look at the whole thing, see how Prabhupada prepared and when he arrived, what his reception was, and how he was able to... Of course, his ripe old age also had a very favorable effect on the public. Sometimes younger people are unable to be so revered or respected. But Prabhupada, he came as everyone's grandfather, so to speak. So he could speak very strongly about controversial points, and people would accept because of his old age.